20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Welcome into the Pack-A-Day Podcast, the 11-3 Packers Podcast, the Steve and Dusty Show back from Lambeau Field. What's up? Sarah's here too.
Did she show up? She showed up?
She was having a little bit of FOMO.
I'm going to go now.
That's cool. We got it. We got this. Don't worry. When we're 1-0, when the Packers are 1-0, when Dusty and I are at Lambeau Field together. So
we're ready to do this podcast together, aren't we, best buddy Steve?
Oh, for sure. Once we met, all the bad sentiments, everything went away, and we just had a great time.
It's true.
I don't like this. I want you to go back to hating each other, because now it's going to be you guys against me. I don't like it.
Yeah, all this anger has to go somewhere. I don't know where it's going to go, Steve. Somewhere. We'll figure it out.
Just wait till we get to watch the video of Sarah eating like seven double or mega stuffs in at once, and that's going to be outstanding.
It's already in my calendar.
We have it circled. It's going to be really good. Good start to the year for us to watch her stuff her face with the most stuff Oreos.
Can't wait. I think she just left, Steve.
I'm all right with it. We'll get her back at some point.
All right.
Just how's it going, guys? We're going to recap. Dusty and I, we're at Lambeau together watching the Packer game. We did FaceTime with Sarah a few times, so she was there with us as well in spirit, but great victory for the Packers, a little nail biting at the end, but still all in all, an 11-3 is a great record. And I'm with Brian Bulaga, and I'm not going to apologize for the Packers having an 11-3 record. How are you guys doing? What was your overall reaction to the game, Dusty?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it. We were there. We talked about it together while watching the game.
Were you there?
I was there. Yeah, we haven't mentioned it very often. So, they tried some things. It still seems like they're tinkering some, which I'm totally cool with, just trying to figure out what works and what doesn't. I think we saw some more Sternberger this game, which I really like what he's been doing. So, I mean, they won. Like you said, Steve, they're 11-3. It's hard to complain about that. They did, you know... They had fits and starts. They had some good moments or some moments that could have been really, really good. I think about that first play with MVS, and if that hits, if we perceive the game differently. Handful of shots like that, you know, Devontae dropped one, Geronimo dropped one. Like, it's perceived a little differently, I think. But overall, it's hard to argue with 11-3 plus with the Dallas win the very next hour, the Packers getting into the playoffs. So there's... Man, listen, there's certainly things to clean up on both sides of the ball. I think probably more offense than defense at this point, but they're 11-3 and they're going to the playoffs. I feel amazing. I feel amazing.
Sarah, yeah. How was it watching at home?
I mean, it was good. They won. Anytime the Packers win is obviously a great day for me. So I was very excited. I do have like an initial reaction, and that's just – if anyone is upset or doesn't like this ugly winning, just shut it. They're winning. So I think I tweeted after the game. Yeah, I did. I would, and I also put this in my recap because I was a little triggered about it. I would rather be 11-3 and have a few ugly wins than like, and be, you know, clinch a playoff spot and be going in the postseason than not. So let's just soak it all in. At this time last year, things were completely different. You know, McCarthy was getting fired. The season was a dumpster fire, basically. And now we're 11-3 and going to the playoffs. So that's huge. Let's just soak it in, appreciate that. And yes, there's things that weren't perfect. Like Dusty said, the game could have been interpreted entirely different if, you know, some plays went through. But hey, we're 11-3. We're playing meaningful games in December, and that's good enough for me.
Very true. Last year at this point in the season, the theme for the Packers was we're playing for Joe, as in mm-hmm. Joe Phil. Like mm-hmm. that was the theme of that was the only thing going on in the season was, hey, let's win a couple games for Joe Philbin, see if we can get him a head coaching gig. Like, nah, this is way better. This is a way better feeling being 11-3. Dusty, I do have to ask, outside of meeting me, what was the coolest part of your weekend?
I mean, man, anytime you get to go to Lambeau, it's just an amazing experience. I mean, we go, if we're lucky, once a year, you know, living in Kentucky, that's a decent drive. And being able to go up there, we choose December because it just doesn't feel like Packers football in that stadium unless it's cold. And so being in that stadium was amazing. We got to meet some incredible people, some people that I feel like I've known for a while, some people that have meant a ton to me. Just in this, you know, in this, as I've been writing, as I've been doing some of this stuff, and we got to meet Aaron Nagler. We got to meet, and Nagler's been just huge for me, just a huge supporter of me, really, since I started writing. When I didn't write under the same site he wrote for, like he was just, he's been huge for me in terms of kind of where I am now, which is amazing. We met Corey Behnke, who is just amazing, just his, just very enthusiastic, very genuine, very, nice, just an amazing person.
An outstanding old fashioned as well.
The best old fashioned I've ever had. We got to meet Maggie Loney, who was just as pleasant a person as I've ever come across. Just a genuinely nice and positive human being. And getting to meet her and her husband was there as well. That was amazing. And we got to meet Mark Beach. Mark Beach, if you don't know, wrote The People's Team, which is just came out, I think, a couple months ago. That celebrates 100 years of Packers football. He wrote for SI for years. He's an editor for the People's Tribune. What's it called, Sarah? People's Tribune? Is that right? Players Tribune. Sorry.
Players Tribune.
So he's been around for forever. He was actually the first person to talk to Aaron Rodgers after he was drafted. And we sat and talked ball with him for probably 2 hours. That dude just has stories and stories and stories, and is just one of the nicest guys you could meet. So I got to meet Ross Uglum a little later as well. I missed some people. I know there's a handful of people there, but we missed some people, which was sad. But the people I met were all people that have meant a lot to me, and getting to meet them in person was amazing. And then we got to go to Lambeau and watch the Packers beat the Bears and make the playoffs. I mean, it's it's hard to pick a favorite because of course, like you said, Steve, getting not only to meet you, but to sit next to you and watch a Packers game with you. I've known you for over a year at this point. The whole experience was, I mean, I don't want to go on and on about it, which I just have, but the whole I can't pick a favorite part because the whole trip was just amazing, just absolutely mind-blowingly amazing.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I mean, watching the game with Dusty, like I was telling Sarah beforehand, the first play goes up and within, I'd say, 1 second, Dusty immediately goes, he's got MVS, he's got MVS. So, I mean, it was pretty much exactly the way I pictured watching a game with Dusty, but it was just a lot of fun. Like, it was just him and his brothers, and everybody's having a great time. We were a little chilly, but, you know, for the most part, held our own. And, you know, so whenever the Packers win, it just makes the body a little warmer. So
it's true.
Just a great time to have. Cheesehead TV house is really cool. That was really nice. Brats were flowing, drinks were flowing. That's why we didn't tailgate, was because we were in this amazing house and drinking and eating and having a great time. So overall, just so much fun. I was really happy that we got to meet each other and have a great time at the game. But let's dive in. We've got the 11-3 Packers will be taking on the 10-4 Vikings on Monday Night Football. So it's really going to be a really important game. But besides that, I mean, let's jump into the big news. LaFleur was on Packer transplants with Nagler and Corey. So you guys, just give me some of your reactions to those things that you heard from him. Sarah, we'll start with you. What'd you think?
Almost in shock. I had gotten home from work and I'm making dinner and I was kind of just waiting for my dinner to heat up. And so I'm on Twitter and I'm on my phone. And then all of a sudden I see Nagler's tweet and he's like, yeah, in case you missed this today, coach was on transplant. And I literally like screamed. I was so like, it was just like the shock factor. I was like, what? Like, so I'm looking up immediately. And then when I was eating my dinner, I watched, and Corey's reaction was just, I think, me. Like, I think that just represented like how I felt when he was like, coach, are you there? And like, it was his voice and it was him. I literally was freaking out. I was like, that is the coolest thing ever. Kudos to those two guys for getting him on the show. Obviously, he's probably not an easy person to reach or contact. I know that the Packers, I think Vice President of Communications, played an instrumental role in getting him on the show. So shout out to him. I forgot what his name is. I'm sorry. Someone I'm sure will correct me, but I know it was him, and that's really awesome. And it's just great to see. I think that's something I've always liked about the team this year and the culture, is that they're open to trying things like that. And I'm all for it. I think it was awesome. So kudos to them for that.
Yeah, it was Jason Wallers was the Packers VP of Communications, which LaFleur bagged on him a lot, which I thought was fun. I didn't get a chance to watch it till later, but I honestly, for a little while, I just saw, like, Coach was on our was on transplants. I was like, okay, is it just, like, Nagler doing an oppression or something? I didn't know it was actually him until I actually watched it. Yeah, it was awesome. It was great. You get to see some of his personality, which you've seen before. I feel like he's loosening up as the season goes on. It was awesome. It was a blast.
And one of the things that LaFleur touched on, Jake Kumerow, going to see the field a little bit more. Dusty, just kind of break down, what does that do for you emotionally, spiritually, mentally? What does that prepare you for? Is this a good thing for Packers fans?
It prepares me for less Geronimo Allison.
That's not guaranteed. That is not guaranteed. I mean, Devontae could come off the field a little more too.
Sure. Sure, he could.
It's touchdown Jesus. I mean, come on.
Well, listen.
Packers love them some white wide receivers.
We're all having fun here. We're all having fun here. I am very much on the record as anti-hype white wide receivers, just because of that. I've seen too much of that. Well, I lived through the Janus years. Those were dark times, man. Kumerow is not some game breaker. Kumerow is 27-28 years old and has not really caught on at this point in his career for a reason. I don't think Kumerow is the answer for any offense. Just putting him out there, like, he's not going to be amazing. What he can be is solid. I said this, I think, before the season, and you guys were like, haha, you're dumb. You're a dumb person. Why do you talk to us? You're a dumb person. Kumerow is, like, his ceiling is essentially...
No, it's not just because of that one take.
No, it was just
normal conversation.
It was just that one thing. That's my understanding. Just that one thing. Kumerow and Allison, Kumerow's a little faster, but Kumerow and Allison essentially profiles the same wide receiver. They're possession-ish receivers that can hit big if something is schemed up for them and if they play off with how the defense is shading them. Kind of bigger guys. Kumerow's a little more physical, and Kumerow's got a little more speed. The big thing that I was stating before the season is Kumerow, from what we've seen, has better hands, and my knock on Allison has always been hands. So a possession receiver that's slow without great hands is not much of a receiver at all. So for me, that trade-off, what I wanted before the season even was keep one of those guys. I was trending towards Kumerow at that point, but I didn't really care which one. Just don't keep both of them because they're basically the same guy and you're limited with what you can do with those receivers. And then EQ went down and blah, 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 blah. But I think if Kumerow gets more time, that to me says, okay, probably Kumerow on the field more, Allison on the field less. Or you split some of those, Allison on the field less, and then Lazard, who has been getting more touches anyway, gets some more touches, and him and Kumerow show those extra ones. But it's less excitement about Kumerow because Kumerow's a dude. Kumerow's fine. It's just less Allison. And at this point, I think everyone's on board that Les Allison is fine. He's a good dude. He's where he needs to be. He'll make plays occasionally, but he's not. The less we see of Allison on the field, the better off I think we are.
Could not agree more, especially after Dusty posted Allison's drop rate, which is basically like, what, 13% on average?
Yeah, I think he was 12% this year. I think 13% his first year, and then like roughly 10-ish those middle two. So yeah, basically more or less the same. He's in that same range. It's just he is who he is.
Yeah, it's not great, Bob. No. Not great.
No.
Let's transition. Let's do what we always do, is taking a look at the Packers offense versus their opponent's defense for the week. So that is going to be the Vikings vaunted defense this time around in Minnesota. So, Sarah, let's start with you, then we'll kick it around to me, and then let Dusty go crazy as we always do. So, what is the biggest thing you're looking for this week, Packers offense, Vikings defense?
All right. So, I always like to find interesting and funny – not funny, but ironic statistics, too, because I love when people do that on Twitter and just totally take it out of context. And I found one when it came to my research for this. So right now, the Vikings defense is statistically ranked 14th in the NFL. So kind of riding in the middle of the pack. But something that's very interesting about this is that the average ranking defensively in the Patriots six Super Bowls is 14th. So people were having a field day with that on Twitter. And then I was looking on some blogs. And, of course, people were like, the Vikings are going to win the Super Bowl because they had the same, like, ranking as the Patriots or whatever. But anyways, so, I mean, I think we know that the Vikings have always been a good team defensively. I think that is not as a shock to anyone. But this year in particular, they have struggled a little bit in pass coverage. So what I'm going to be looking for is, how are we going to involve our receivers? Are we going to change our game plan a little bit and our approach? I know Rhodes, I think we were saying, is just non-existent. He's benched right now, correct? So, you know, what's the adjustment there? Do, you know, we obviously Devontae is our guy, but who else do we get involved? You know, are we really going to see more Kumaro, like LaFleur said on transplants today? Who's going to get involved? So I'm just going to be kind of looking into that and kind of see what happens there. I know Dusty's going to get a little more into that, but that's basically kind of the matchups we'll be looking for is, you know, what's our game plan against their defense that has struggled a little bit in pass coverage?
I've got a couple things I'm looking for. Just one of the big ones is, you know, we've been looking for an identity for the Packers offense for 14 weeks now, 15 weeks now. So just in, you can tell Packers fans are getting frustrated. They're not loving the fact that the team isn't throwing up huge numbers like they have in the past. So the biggest thing I want to see for offensive continuity, I'm going to be looking at the offensive line. I want to see how they can handle that front seven from Minnesota, because as Sarah said, they can give up some stuff on the back end of things, but that front four and those linebackers. I mean, you're looking at Everson Griffin, you're looking at Danielle Hunter, you're looking at Kendricks. Like those dudes are bad men, and they are big guys that can get after the quarterback really quickly. So I'm interested to see how they're holding up. The Packers have been doing pretty well, especially, you know, against Khalil Mack. If Aaron Rodgers starts getting rid of the ball when a lot of us think he should, like, I don't think it should be an issue, but if it starts to hold on to the ball and not take those hot reads and taking the quick throws, we might be in for a long day again. So that's one thing I want to see, how the offensive line holds up against the Vikings defense. And then just an interesting fact that I had heard was that the Vikings defense gives up seven fewer points at home than they do on the road, which was very intriguing. But Dusty, I don't know if you still have this pulled up. We actually kind of dove into their home versus their away schedule, and their home schedule was a lot easier than their away schedule was.
Yeah, they did. So their home schedule, they played the Falcons, and that was week one. So that's, I mean, the Falcons have been better at it of late, but this was back in the darkest ages of the Falcons. So they played at home the Falcons, the Raiders, the Eagles, Washington, the Broncos, and the Lions at home. And then away, they've played the Packers, obviously, the Bears, the Giants, the Lions, the Chiefs, the Cowboys, the Seahawks, and the Chargers. So, I mean, not exactly a murderer's row either way, but the three toughest teams they faced with the Packers, or I guess four, Packers, Chiefs, Cowboys, and Seahawks were all on the road. Their home schedule, not a whole lot of world beaters at home for them so far.
So yeah, it'll be interesting to see, you know, now the Packers will be probably their most difficult home game to date. So we'll see kind of how they line up. I mean, it kind of makes sense that they would have a much better scoring differential at home than they would on the road with those teams being they played. So Dusty, let's throw it to you. What are you looking for in this game?
Yeah, I want to talk about just pressure real quick, because we know Za'Darius Smith. You guys know Za'Darius Smith. You're familiar with his work.
He's a pretty good football player.
He's fine. He has 56 QB pressures this year. Danielle Hunter also 56. They're roughly the same. I think Hunter has the edge in sacks. It's 13.5 to 10, and Smith has the edge in QB hits. 30 to 21. So just something to keep in mind when you're thinking of how Za'Darius Smith looks. Just think the Vikings have a guy that's essentially doing what he's doing this season as well, which is terrifying. That is terrifying. So there's that. I start looking at DVOA, offensive, defensive, by passing and rushing. This is kind of fun this week. The Packers have the 8th ranked passing offense by DVOA. The Vikings have the 8th ranked passing defense. The Packers have the 4th ranked rushing offense. The Vikings have the 4th ranked rushing defense. They match up really, really well just in those two areas in terms of DVOA rankings, which is, I don't know, you don't often see that. It's just, it's a fun little oddity. So I had to dig a little deeper. So I usually just go straight numbers, which I don't know why. I watch a lot of football and I don't know. I look at numbers, but I don't always dig straight into numbers. So I don't know why I do this for this podcast. I don't know, man. It's easier, I guess. Numbers are easy. So we'll start with numbers. And I just kind of want to talk about some observations I had from the past week. So the Vikings are good, but as Sarah had mentioned, their pass defense, maybe that's where they're susceptible. So I looked into Football Outsiders where they have ranking their defense versus various other wide receivers. They are 5th against wide receiver 2 in defending wide receiver 2. So they're good there. They're actually 1st against defending tight ends. So some of these heavy looks that we've been seeing with involving Sternberger more, Graham kind of having some better weeks here, Tanyan a little more, it may be tough sledding for those tight ends. However, 23rd against wide receiver 1s and 23rd against non-number 2 wide receivers. So think of that based on what LaFleur said. If Kumerow is getting more touches and we kind of assume that Allison gets fewer, or at least we'll say snaps, we'll say we'll split those other wide receivers against Kumerow and Lazard. So possible big days from Adams and Lazard slash Kumerow. And Adams had a good game against them back in week 1. Or I'm sorry, not back in week 1. Whenever he played them, week 2, I guess. He had caught 9 passes on, or 7 passes on 9 targets for 106 yards. Really, really good. And they've struggled with elite wide receivers, even when they haven't. Like, for example, like in week 7, they went up against Kenny Golladay. They held Golladay to 1 catch on 2 targets for 21 yards. Amendola went for over 100 yards on 11 targets. So if they're laser focused on shutting down that one, they're still going to create gaps elsewhere. So I could see another big day for Adams, and if not him, then maybe someone else kind of steps up there. And it's on whoever that's going to be to step up. So that's something to look at. And just kind of digging a little bit more, watching the last game, because I don't have unlimited time, just looking at that Chargers game and kind of what the Chargers were able to do, because that first half they hung with Minnesota some. What I saw in that was they had success with some hard cuts in the middle of the field. And I'll dig into this a little bit more, but if you look at kind of an angle route or a shallow, say a 5 to 7 yard dig route from the slot or something, they were killing the Vikings. They ran a handful of those in the first half, had very good success with them. And so that's something we've seen the Packers run the Texas concept, and they break it out on occasion. They broke it out a couple weeks ago, which is kind of the tight end from that inline position running a post to kind of take some of the top off, and then you run an angle route underneath him with a running back, or in some cases a wide receiver. It depends on how you want to run it. I could see the Packers having success with a concept like that. And something else that I noticed was the Vikings, at least in that game, stayed in a personnel that allowed the Chargers to get a wide receiver, in some cases a number 1 or number 2 wide receiver, matched up on a linebacker out of the slot. So I would expect to see, based on formations, we saw Adams. He was in the slot per Pro Football Focus. 15 snaps of his came in the slot this past week, which was his highest number of the season. So I expect to see more of Adams in the slot, get some motion, get some shifts pre-snap to see what the Vikings are doing. And then you're looking to get Adams or Lazard or something in the slot, either matched up on a linebacker or matched up on a lesser cornerback, and then killing them with some of those in-cutting stuff. So that's why I wouldn't be shocked to see, based on how the Vikings have played defense against tight ends this year. The Packers have been, I talked last week about how they were going a little more tight end heavy, work on this tight end heavy personnel. I wouldn't be shocked to see them in a lot of 11 personnel this week, which would be 1 running back, 1 tight end, 3 wide receivers, just because I think the matchups work out a little better this week to do that. So I'll be very curious to see if that's what they end up doing. So that's what I'm looking for. A lot of the stuff Sarah was talking about, just looking at those wide receivers, seeing how they match up against some of those cornerbacks, and then seeing what they do in terms of putting Adams or Lazard or whoever in the slot, trying to get them matched up against the 3rd or 4th cornerback or even a linebacker, because we have seen a lot of that, and then just some of that in-cutting stuff over the middle. That's definitely the area I'm going to be looking at.
That was a long, long speech that you had there, my friend.
And I'm really thirsty.
I'll give you a little bit of...
That's the out of context quote for this.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I'm very a little disappointed you don't have a bourbon in your hand, but
I just finished. I picked up Elijah Craig Barrel Proof up in but some seedy liquor store in Green Bay. So yeah, I already finished that one, Steve.
Ah, that's good. That's good. I just finished my Eagle Rare, so we're right on pace with each other. Outstanding. Nice. So we do our score predictions as well every single week for the Bears game. Again, all three of us had correctly picked the Packers. So that does put Dusty and I with the Green Bay Packers at 11-3 and Sarah sitting at 10-4. With this week being the Monday Night Football game and the fact that Dalvin Cook is still up in the air, we have decided to push our predictions. We are going to put them out on Twitter over the weekend once that announcement is made. Once we know, because as much as we do want to watch Sarah eat a whole sleeve of most of Oreos, it's still the Christmas season, so Dusty and I are in a bit of a giving mood to let her get as much information as possible before making her prediction. So we will be pushing that. So make sure you follow us at Dusty Evely, at Sarah Kelleher, for at Steve Perich. We'll put out our predictions for that all in one. Most likely to be tweeted by the Pack of Day podcast as well. And we'll go from there. But as the next time we will be recording will actually be Christmas night. I had something to end the show with. I just kind of wanted to talk to you. Get this from you guys. What is your all-time favorite Christmas cookie? And what Christmas movie would you be watching while you eat said cookie? So we gave Sarah a lot of crap before the show started. But she told us that we would be eating our words. So Sarah, tell us, what is your cookie and what is your Christmas movie?
Okay, so my cookie actually has sentimental value. And my grandma, who she passed away around this time last year, she was very close. She was like a second mother to me. She's actually where my family roots from Wisconsin come from. So that just tells you how awesome nice. She is. She was an amazing cook, amazing baker, all of the above. And she made these green sugar cookies that were like little Christmas trees. And they were the best thing ever. They had little tiny red sprinkles on them, and they were mini Christmas tree, like green sugar cookies, and they were the best. And the coolest thing ever is that she, when she got sick, she left behind all of the recipes for them. So my mom and I like have tried, like last Christmas, we made them, and it was pretty similar. Obviously not the most amazing thing ever, but pretty similar, and it's awesome. So I love eating those cookies. We even, like, it just makes me, now I'll think of her, but they're also amazing. And then I would eat that cookie while I'm watching The Christmas Story, because my family has notoriously watched that every single year on the really basic marathon of it. But my family is very into it. Like, we have an ornament on our family Christmas tree that is the sticking your tongue to the flagpole. And if you, like, if you press it, it has like a button and it yells like, I'm stuck. So we're really into it. Last year, Ice at the Gaylord Palms was a Christmas Story themed. So that was freaking cool. So of course we were all like, oh my gosh, we knew everything. So it's really awesome. So those would be my two, my grandma's cookies while watching Christmas Story.
Dusty.
So now you probably feel bad, Steve, for making fun of me.
No,
so
we were making fun of the movie, not the cookies.
No,
we thought,
no, I don't. You realize I never feel bad for making fun of you.
That's true. You can only feel bad.
You can
if you
write
have a soul.
That down as the quote of the week.
Yeah, that is definitely the quote of the week.
For me, my cookie is going to be Spritz cookies. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Spritz cookies.
Yes.
Yeah, they're like 90% butter, and you shoot them out of a gun. That's all I know about them.
America.
That's right. That's right. Just like God intended cookies to be eaten.
Those are really similar to the Christmas tree ones. Like,
I was actually wondering about that as you were talking about it.
I don't know exactly what the method is, but I looked up like the picture of the Christmas version and they're very similar. So.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, we do them in a handful of different shapes. I know Christmas tree is one of them. I think snowflake is another. And there's one more, I think. My my dad used to make them, and now it's become a tradition that my dad and my sister make them together, and they make just, I'm not exaggerating, buckets and buckets of the things, just actual honest to God buckets. And they'll do chocolate and almond and vanilla, the three flavors, and the almond ones are just incredible, and you can just eat them by the handful and then feel terrible later, but they're so good. They're so good. So I'm doing Spritz cookies. I'm having a tough time with the movie. So I'm actually going to do a double feature. This will surprise precisely...
Some horror movie?
Precisely no one. Yes. So I'm going to start with Gremlins, because Gremlins is, of course, you know, an adorable little film about gremlins that invade a town around Christmas, and then also just the most horrifying Christmas story of a dad trying to make his family happy on Christmas ever, just dropped right in the middle by a very young Phoebe Cates. And I'm going to follow that up with Silent Night, Deadly Night, which is one of my traditions. after everyone's in bed on Christmas Eve, I grab a West 6 Christmas Ale. It's a local beer here. And I sit and I watch Silent Night, Deadly Night, and it is a garbage,
Dusty.
I think early 80s
Dusty,
slasher.
What?
Yeah. It's basically this kid sees his parents just murdered by a Santa when he's young, and then he gets older, and he's growing up in a convent with nuns, you understand, and then like something snaps in him, and he's really handsome. Steve, you're not gonna believe how handsome this guy is. And then they make him dress as Santa, but he can't stand
Why
Santa.
Did you say that to Steve?
And he
goes, Steve, you can't believe it.
And he goes,
Steve would be the one.
Sarah, you
impressive. You got a snort out of me.
Sarah, you wouldn't believe how handsome he is either. Neither of you would believe. And then he goes on a killing spree dressed as Santa. It's just as just trashy as all hell. It's got Lene Quigley in it, who is a kind of an 80s scream queen from Louisville, which is kind of how I know her, but she was in Return of the Living Dead. She's in there with just a tremendous death. There's a scene that I have.
You realize I said Christmas movie.
Yeah.
All the blood and death.
He's dressed as Santa. He's dressed as Santa. And then if we're going to do a triple feature, I'll just finish off with Die Hard.
All you had to say was the Santa Claus, and you would have been fine. We could have just moved along.
I'm sorry, Steve. I'm not familiar with that one. That's, you know what? That's my cookies and my movies, and I don't apologize.
I would never expect you to apologize.
What do you have, Steve?
So my mother will make it's a peanut butter cookie with the Hershey Kiss pushed into the top.
Those are fire.
Pro move. Oh my God. I can eat the whole thing all in one sitting and feel gluttonous and horrible, but feel amazing all at the same time. And they only get made one time a year. So she makes them at Christmas time. And even when I was living in Korea, like, she went out of her way to send them to me for Christmas time, which was outstanding. And I would eat those while watching Christmas Vacation. As much as Dusty, you said Die Hard, like, I will go to bat that's a Christmas movie every day of the year. It's not something I have to watch every year. I do have to watch Christmas Vacation, and I have to watch Home Alone. Those are like my two go-tos that I need to watch every year. To solidify the fact that I love that movie so much, I own a Clark Griswold Blackhawks jersey that I wear any time that it's a ugly Christmas sweater. Awesome. I don't own one of those. I will wear my Clark Griswold jersey. And then my plan is when my kids get a little bit older to the point where they can be embarrassed of me, I plan to be Cousin Eddie for Halloween at all times possible. So nice. You can imagine the short bathrobe and the winter hat and everything like, and the boots. Like, that's that's going to be my go-to when my kids are old enough to embarrass the hell out of them. So hopefully that gives you guys a little bit of a peek into our holiday traditions. You know, Dusty and Death. Christmas. I don't know if that's the best way to describe it, but
yeah, accurate.
Yeah.
Let us know your on Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. We'd love to know your favorite cookies, your favorite Christmas movies, even, you know, any Christmas traditions you want to share. We'd obviously love to hear them. Jump into
you celebrate a different holiday. Mm-hmm. Not exclusive to Christmas.
That's
We're
correct.
Open to all holidays.
We are.
Holiday cookie, apparently, is what Sarah would like to say.
No, I
don't. She's saying Christmas cookie, but we are an inclusive podcast. We are an inclusive people.
I don't want someone, if they're listening and they're Jewish and they celebrate Hanukkah, to be like, oh, I have this cool tradition. I still want to hear about it. That's all I meant.
All right, that's fair. Absolutely. We want to hear about any type of dessert tradition and holiday movie, we'd like to know those. Is that yes, is, you yes, good, Sarah? Please. Good?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Final thoughts. Sarah, do you have anything before we wrap this up?
I don't think so. I'm super excited for the game. And just like I said earlier, be grateful. This season has been, I think, more than anything we all expected 6 months ago. So when you're frustrated and you're angry, just remember that.
Dusty, articles, videos, what do you got for me?
Yeah, I got my articles. I had over on Packer Report on yesterday. I had something about pressure. I looked at five plays. I'd kind of been talking about it for a little bit, but the lead up to this game was kind of the Packers looking to generate pressure with their front four or even five, but really just cutting off those escape lanes. I just kind of showed how they did that. I had five plays that kind of showed how they did that against Trubisky. I had a couple more on Twitter as well that kind of showed that as well, but just that plan of not necessarily overwhelming pressure, not selling out, but really just compressing that pocket and making the quarterback uncomfortable and not allowing him any escape room. So I had that. That came out on Wednesday. Thursday, I've got Passing Chronicles, which is my big article over on Cheesehead TV. And I've got kind of started that off with breaking down the differences. real nerdy things, but it's exciting. The differences between the Lavelle Edwards mesh concept and the Hal Mumme mesh concept and how the Packers have been using that this year and specifically this past game and kind of taking that and taking the best bits of each and melding those together into something that works. So they ran variations of the mesh concept four times this past week. And so I kind of took a look at those four as well as a handful of other plays, including the Adams touchdown early in the game. So that was a really, really fun one to write. I get to get into kind of the history of the concept a little, as well as again, how the Packers are kind of changing that a little based on who they have. So that was a really, really fun thing to work with. So I did that. That's on Thursday. That's today. And then Friday, over on Packer Report, I've got one where I'm talking about, I've had like, I think two articles that kind of touch on this topic already. This, the Packers and their need for a second wide receiver that can threaten like a single high safety so they can hit something over the top. Well, I use that opening shot to MVS where they actually did get the safety to pull up and they got that safety to pull because it was haha Clinton Dix. And I just basically showed how that just even that, cause what I talk about, it's all been in theory. I don't mean to take a shot at the guy really, but that it just happened to work. How I've been talking about in theory, this getting that safety to even just take one step up, just a single step, how that opens things up over the top. And so we've got a play, we've got the single high safety taking a single step up. So just kind of showing how this was manufactured more or less by the safety taking a step when you didn't need to, but how that one step, how big that can be when you're looking at those over the top shots and what that can mean in terms of adding a second speed receiver. So that's going to be up on Packer Report on Friday. So yeah, three articles, really good week, really fun to write about. And at the end of the Cheesehead one, I do kind of talk about the trip to Green Bay and how much fun it was and got a couple pictures in there as well. So yeah, I mean, it's good week for writing and just a good week for just, I mean, we're a couple days removed from the game and I'm still riding that high of actually being there. So just, it's been a really fun week.
I've got a couple just minor little things that I would like to, you know, talk about, especially, you know, being in Lambeau and everything. I think one of my favorite parts of being in Lambeau was watching the game with Dusty, where he and his brother were trashing Mitchell Trubisky, and I was loving every minute of it. We were watching the defense, and he's just, you know, as Dusty does, he points these things out to me, and just things that I do notice, but yeah, I've definitely noticed more that Dusty's been in my life for over a year now, and I pick these things up a little bit more. But he's like, oh my god, look at that, the safeties are like 6-7 yards from the line of scrimmage. That they want him to throw the ball, they just want him to throw the ball, and he would not throw the ball. He'd throw it like 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage. And the best part was that his brother was saying the exact same thing except even louder. So it was, that part to me was a lot of fun. I took a bus from Milwaukee. I was at Saz's and I took the bus up. One of my favorite memories from that was I got off the bus to go meet Dusty and I realized that I had left my glasses on the bus. So went right back in, went to the back of the bus. And while I'm walking back, some guy looks at me and goes, and I'm wearing my David Bakhtiari jersey. And a guy looks at me and goes, number 69. Nice. And I was like, cool. And it's like, well, it's like, is that like a custom jersey or what? And I kind of looked at him like, No. It's he's like, oh, I'm not from here. I don't know who that is. And I was like, okay, that's weird. And then the two ladies right behind him looked at me and they go, 69. Nice. And I was like, oh my God, this is perfect. Like, this is just like Dusty should be here right now for this, but he was not. But it was just made me laugh the whole way. It was just being in Green Bay was just so much fun. Everybody was so nice, so cordial, everything like that. And for me, to end the show, my ultimate fanboy moment happened when I was at the Cheesehead TV house and Dusty introduced me to Aaron Nagler and he kind of knew who I was. So that was kind of it. So that for me, like, I thought that was so cool. And I was inside my heart. I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. I'm like, nice to meet you, Aaron. So a little glimpse inside of me of just like freaking out when Aaron Nagler was like, hey, you do a good job with Dusty. Yeah, I freaked out. I was totally freaking out inside. So it was a great, great experience in Lambeau. The Packers got the win. We were all happy. They're now 11-3. Looking forward to the Viking game. So, guys, we will chat on Christmas night and then deliver the following Christmas day episode for everyone. And make sure you always, as always, follow us on Twitter. We've got at Dusty Evely, at Sarah Keller 4, at C Perch, where we will definitely throw out our score predictions before the game. So make sure to check that in because, you know, most stuff Oreos, got to make sure that happens. We want Sarah to continually lose. So Dusty and I will have a separate DM in order to figure that out. But
so wrong.
That video is going to be golden. It's going to be all over YouTube.
It's gonna be so sad.
Yeah, but as always, make sure you follow us there. Hit us up with your Christmas cookie, holiday movie, whatever your tradition is. We'd love to hear about it. And we will talk to you guys next week after hopefully a Packers victory over the Vikings. So we'll chat to you then. And as always, go Pack, go.